Welcome to the Abracadam Podcast, and I'm your host, stand-up comedy magician, Danny Whitson. I hope all you listeners are having a abracadam good time this week. I know I am. Nothing in particular going on. I'm just in a good mood. So if you can be in a good mood, be in a good mood. And if you can't be in a good mood, well, be in a good mood. I do want to take this time real quick to talk about an issue that is going on in this country right now that seems to be flying under the radar. Now, I know we've got all these other things going on in this country, so there's a lot of distractions from some of the important issues. But I discovered this yesterday, and it really disturbed me. I found out in this country, in the United States of America, we have way too many flavors of vanilla. And this bugs me because we're not talking about chocolate. We're not talking about strawberry. We're talking about vanilla. And this was in the ice cream section, folks. I was looking in the ice cream section and all I wanted was vanilla. But I saw we had vanilla, but then we got vanilla bean. Then we got French vanilla. Then we got homemade vanilla, which, by the way, I think that's a lie. And then here's the one that keeps me up at night. This one right here, double vanilla. Now, what is double vanilla? I have no clue. What is it, vanilla? And then let's put some more vanilla. I mean, what is double vanilla? Double chocolate is usually like milk chocolate and dark chocolate. So what is the equivalent of dark chocolate for vanilla? Would it be albino vanilla? I don't know. But if I just invented a new flavor, Ben and Jerry's, hit me up. Danny Whitson's albino vanilla could be a new sponsor. Speaking of sponsors, let's take this time to give a quick shout out to our sponsors here at the Abracadam Podcast. Now, I don't know about you, but I hate doing laundry. I can't stand it. No, I got better things to do in life than to fold my socks. So let Bob's Washboard Wash and Fold Service do that for you. Do your complete wash in only 4 minutes. 2 minutes to drop it off and 2 minutes to pick it up. Drop off your laundry and go live your life, baby. Go find something fun to do. Go see a movie. Go catch butterflies. Go paint trees. Whatever it is you like to do, go do it. Come back and your laundry will be clean, folded, and ready to go. Also, if you're traveling to the Knoxville area or Anderson County area and you need somewhere to do your laundry, Bob's Washboard Wash and Fold will take care of you. Definitely check them out at 122 Randolph Road, Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and give them a call at 865-951-3237 and give our Facebook page a like at Bob's Washboard. Also, this episode is brought to you by Mad Science Judo and Jiu-Jitsu. Now, I've been watching the Cobra Kai series on Netflix here lately, and it got me thinking about some things. Like, what would you do, Danny, if you were attacked? I mean, would you really, really, truly know how to defend yourself? Now, most of us think like we can get away with pick up a wrench or something, or maybe do the Molarian curly eye poke. But let's be honest, you wouldn't know what to do. That's why you need to let Coach Ted at Mad Science Judo and Jiu-Jitsu teach you what to do. Now, Coach Ted is a 20-year military veteran, and he served in Iraq and Afghanistan, so this guy knows real-world self-defense. He's a fourth-degree black belt in jiu-jitsu. He's a fourth-degree black belt in judo, a second-degree black belt in kempo, and a first-degree black belt in kung fu. The list goes on and on. This guy's got more belts than a JCPenney's and a Belk. Got more than a Goodwill. And right now, they've got an introductory special going, a 2-week trial program for just $39.99. You get 2 weeks of unlimited classes and a training uniform to wear. Definitely can't beat this. Be sure to check out Mad Science Judo and Jiu-Jitsu located at 697 Emery Valley Road, Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Give them a call at 865-440 2210 and check them out on the internet at madsciencejudoandjujitsu.com. Now, besides being attacked, another thing we all need to think about is what would you do if your car broke down? You'd be stuck. Yeah. Who would you call? I mean, that's a big fear of mine. What would I do? I'm no mechanic. I'll be honest with you. I don't know anything about cars. I don't. But that's okay. Because if you do break down, let Will's Towing take care of you. That's right. Will Roberts at Will's Towing. Professional service, fast and safe. Will's Towing. Anytime your car breaks down, any trouble, don't hesitate to call Will at 865-272-5300, located at 2081 Oak Ridge Turnpike, Oak Ridge, Tennessee. All right. Well, I'm excited for the guest for this episode. She is somebody who I have known for a long time now. I had the pleasure of meeting her at Willowbrook Elementary quite a few years ago. She is an exciting person to talk to because every time you talk to her, you learn something. She is like a walking Google for anything sciencey. She is the science outreach educator for American Museum of Science and Energy. She is, like I said, just a bowl of knowledge for anything science. So please sit back and enjoy my fun conversation with my good friend, Chris Light. Okay, we've got Miss Chris Light here today. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm doing fine, Danny. Good to see you.
Good to see you. It's been a while.
It's been a few years, actually. It's been quite a while.
Well, I tell you what, if you don't mind, do you care to let the listeners know a little background and who you are?
Okay. Well, my degree is in microbiology, which is kind of an odd thing to have a degree in. After I graduated from UT back in 1977, so it's been quite a few years, I worked for the biology division out at Y-12 plant here in Oak Ridge. And then Jimmy Carter came along and he cut the funds. And so I was the last one in. So I was the first one out. So that was about the same time that the medical school up at East TSU was opening up. So I applied up there and got a job in the internal medicine lab. And I worked there for 2 years. So I was working with animal cells and counting cells and that type of thing. So then my husband and I met and we got married and we moved down here to Oak Ridge in 1980. So I've been here for a little over 40 years. So then our children were born and after our daughter went to nursery school, I thought I need to do something. So I've always been interested in photography. So I started taking pictures of plants and then I thought, well, maybe I can do something with this. So I wrote up a little program about, I called it plant adaptations. And I was kind of like a dog that was chasing a car. I caught it, but I didn't know what to do with it. So I started asking around and first thing I thought of was the Children's Museum. So I went up there and I talked to Selma Shapiro. And she said, well, we can't use anything like that, but I know somebody that might. And this was a couple of women out at believe it or not, again, the Environmental Sciences Division had started a program that was teaching kids about environmental science. So I showed them my program. Actually, back then it was slides. Showed them my slide program. And they liked it. And the next thing I knew, I had a job. So, and I've done that now for 32 years. It'll be 33 years in October. So I'm glad that dog finally caught that car.
Now, that's interesting. You said you've got your degrees in microbiology.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's, you know, kind of, You moved on from there to plants. So you already probably had somewhat of a connection with, what is it?
stuff on that level, I guess, is what I'm
trying
to say.
Well, I had taken, I called it half of a botany course. And in fact, it was so long ago that algae was still considered a plant. It's not now. I had Dr. Sharp, who anybody that's been in botany knows he's one of the best that ever lived, probably. Working in a lab, you're doing the same thing. And I ended up having to wear bifocals because of that at 25, because gotcha. You're staring cross-eyed through a microscope. So when I got into teaching, I really found my niche, and I was so much happier. I loved doing it. I ended up developing about 20 different classes for that program. And at first we did all the teaching out at the Friel's cabin. So the fact that it's not open to the public had it, you know, it was protected, and it was a wonderful place to do those programs.
Now, was Friel's cabin, was it only open whenever you were doing any type of classes, or?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And where's yeah. Friel's cabin located?
Well, you know where Carbide Park is, or Clark Center Park?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Where you make that sharp curve, there's a metal pole gate with a gravel road. If you go down that road, that takes you to the Friel's cabin, and it's actually on the National Historic Registry.
So currently right now, though, nothing's going on out there now. So no one could go out there and visit or anything.
No, it's not open to the public. It's okay. It's government land, but it was a perfect place for us to do programs. And over time we started doing science camps, and I did 28 years of science camps out there. So I've worked with probably close to 1500 kids just in science camps alone.
So it was okay. Cause you mentioned the Children's Museum, and for anyone listening that's not familiar with the Children's Museum, that's a museum located here in Oak Ridge that just has a lot of super cool things. I remember going to the Children, the thing I remember most about the Children's Museum going as a child is I remember going in there and seeing that ginormous polar bear looking at me. It was a big stuffed polar bear, but they had rockets and all kinds of cool little knickknacks and stuff. So is that where you kind of though got your, you know, maybe your start to where you wanted to teach children science?
Well, I've always been interested in science. Even when I was a kid, science was actually my favorite subject. And like I said, I just needed an avenue to be able to give these programs, but they didn't have a need for it. And this actually turned out to be perfect with the program with ESD. And over time, we ended up with several other instructors. Now I'm the only one. They call me the survivor.
You're over at the AMSI though now, correct?
Yes.
American Museum of Science and Energy.
Yes. And I started working there. They transferred us from ORNL over to AMSI about 10 years ago. And it's been a really, really good fit. They've done wonderful things for me. We have three in-house educators there. And I said, I'm the outhouse educator because I'm the one that goes out to the schools. So the teachers can contact the museum, and I will bring all my equipment. And we've got like 20 different hands-on programs that we present. I take that equipment and set it up in the classroom. And then I've got my PowerPoints that I'm able to do the lecture part, and then we teach. But to give you an idea about how important these classes are, after I had taught a fourth grade class about electricity, I was packed up, I was out in the hall getting ready to leave, and this boy came up to me and he said, I never knew science could be fun. And it just broke my heart, because if you have to just read it out of a book and you don't have time to sit there and actually do things, we were setting up electrical circuits and that type of thing, lighting up light bulbs and learning about insulators and conductors and that type of thing. And if you just read about it and you can't actually do that, it's not going to stick. So right now, science education is extremely important. Because
now, you know, I one thing you know so you were talking about electricity, and you know you're talking about screwing in light bulbs and, you know, showing them how that works. First of all, I mean, I think we need all the scientists we can get. Definitely very important. But also, you know, that kid may decide to be an electrician someday just because of something that he saw you do, you know, in your class, you know. So
yeah, we've actually heard about after some of our programs, kids that did go on into science. And of course, with the science camp, a lot of these kids were really interested in science anyway. But some of them have gone on to become PhDs and work in labs and that type of thing. Some of them have ended up out at ORNL and Y-12.
See, I think that's amazing. I think I would like to see science. And I mean, I know we have started doing a better job, and I'm talking about the country as a whole, with introducing science to children, like with, you know, Bill Nye and a lot of these types of shows that they have. But I think it's important that we keep doing that, you know, because there's some kids that, you know, wouldn't have thought in a million years that they could, you know, get their PhD in science, or yeah, even though they had a strong interest in science, because there is a big difference between just reading a book and then actually being shown. And also, let's say this, Chris, you bring some excitement, energy into the things you do. You could tell that you enjoy doing it, and it makes it also interesting for the person watching and learning.
Well, one of the worst things you can do is to be boring. And so, because, you know, I mean, a lot of kids do think that. So if you can put some excitement into it, and we're not screwing in light bulbs when we do that. We're actually using batteries with a aluminum foil wire. And the kids have to figure out how to, their little flashlight light bulbs, and they have to figure out how to light that up. And every single class, and I have taught hundreds of these classes, when we stack three D-cell batteries together and they hit that light bulb base with that aluminum foil wire, they all go, wow! So, you know, I've done this long enough. I pretty well know how kids are going to react to certain things.
And see, those are things I think that they're going to remember forever, you know, regardless to which route they go to, you know, with their careers when they grow up. I think that's something that they're going to remember forever. Now, let me back up just a little bit, because microbiology, I find interesting. I do. Because I think it's amazing, first of all, that there's a world of things underneath us, you know, right in front of us that we can't even see.
Yeah.
Like right now, and I'm sure, yeah, like with algae, you mentioned algae earlier. Was it microbiologists that are working about converting like some type of fuel from algae? Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, I'm not sure if they get some type of oils out of the algae. That may be what it is. But I actually got my first microscope when I was in fourth grade. Okay. And it was a real cheap microscope. It wasn't a very good one. But, you know, to me, it was cool. And I remember going to school and grossing the kids out, telling them that I was ripping the wings off of flies and looking at fly wings and legs. under the microscope. So yeah, like I said, I've had an interest in science all my life. And so now I love being able to share that with others.
What about, are you familiar with tardigrades?
Oh yeah.
Now I'm
the water bears.
Yeah, the water bears. I'm so intrigued by these things. Okay. For people, What is a water bear? What would it be considered? Is it?
It's a tardigrade.
It's a tardigrade, but I mean, is it smaller than a virus or bacteria?
Oh no! You can see them with like a, you know, a 10 power microscope. 100 power would be pretty good. They actually have six legs instead of four. You know, like a bear. But the interesting thing about them, I've only seen one once or twice. But one of the places that you can find them is in algae and in lichens. If you have lichens that can stay wet on a tree or on rocks, you can find them in that. If you put them into water, you know, like fresh water, you wouldn't want to use tap water. But
now they're called like extreme what are they?
Well, sort of like extremophiles, except that's more like bacteria. But yeah, what they can do is they can actually encyst. They can make a cyst around themselves and protect themselves from just about everything. I mean, they've even been exposed to space. And it didn't kill them. I mean, they've taken them up to the International Space Station.
Now, to me, I just find that, I find that amazing, you know, that something can figure out a way to live. You know, like Jeff Goldblum, life finds a way.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of stuff like that. We were talking about Giardia the other day, and that's another thing that can make it insist itself, the organisms.
What is that called?
It's Giardia. It's what, that's just why you don't want to drink water out of streams, especially up, like up in the Smokies, because animals like beavers can carry it, wild boars can carry it. And if you get it, they call it beaver fever. Beaver fever, yeah. Because like I said, beavers can carry it. And a lot of times people, when they would be out west and drink out of the streams out there, they would get it. But it causes horrible gastrointestinal problems.
Now, like the tardigrade doesn't make you sick though, correct?
No, no. Giardia is a protozoan. And so that's what makes them so hard to get rid of, because they can insist and protect themselves in your stomach and in your intestines. So.
Now, do they look anything like a tardigrade?
No, no, they're a lot smaller.
Okay. Well, let me say this real quick. For you guys not familiar with what me and Chris are talking about, the tardigrade water bear, go Google it, because it is one of the coolest little things that exists, in my opinion. And yes, these things have survived the vacuum of space. They're definitely survivors. So I just think they're really little cool. Or would you call them? Are they called an animal? What would they?
They're an animal. Yeah,
they're an animal. That's crazy to call them that. But yeah, if you get a chance, if you're not familiar with the tardigrade is, the water bear, definitely go Google it. Or you can always shoot Chris an email. She'd be glad to answer all your crazy questions. So
probably easier to Google it. I don't have a picture of that. I wish I did.
Where did you? So did you see one in Tennessee? Was it Tennessee where you saw the tardigrade?
Yeah, I've seen it here in Oak Ridge.
One of
the classes that I do is on I call it our microscopic world, and I just go to a pond or the lake and scoop up water. And kids are absolutely amazed when they see what we have in our lake water. And a lot of them are kind of like, oh, that's gross. I said, well, listen, if it wasn't in this water, that would really be bad. Because if you didn't have water fleas and that type of thing, that's a bad sign, because that means that the water is too polluted for them to live in it. Oh. So having these little organisms is a good sign that the water is clean enough that they can survive.
That definitely makes sense. The now you said this, so you'd seen these in Oak Ridge. Now let me get to this real quick, because you said you got into photography, photography of plants, and did you learn, because you know you already knew a lot about plants before you started photography, correct?
Yeah.
So have you, I mean, by doing the photography, did you learn any more about plants, or did you know what plants were best to photograph, or?
No, I was just wandering around. What the plant adaptation class, I would look and try to see like how plants protect themselves, like, you know, with spines or fuzz or whatever, if they have to twine to climb, or if they hang on to, you know, vines hang on with little hairs or little cups on them, like Virginia creeper does. So
now that's interesting. You brought it up, so I gotta bring this up right now. You said Virginia creeper. I have that. There's an argument. There's almost like an ongoing feud argument in East Tennessee, that people will say, hey, watch out, that's a poison oak. And then they say, no, it's actually Virginia creeper, not poison oak. So is it true? Is it poison oak in East Tennessee or Virginia creeper?
It's Virginia creeper. Poison oak is a shrub, and it can be found out west. If you go to California, especially if you go out there in October, the hillsides are bright red with it. Poison ivy has three leaflets. One leaf has three smaller leaves on it. Okay, that's called a compound leaf. Virginia creeper has five leaflets. So when I was in Girl Scouts, we learned the old, you know, leaves of three, leave it be. If it's got five leaves, you can shake hands with it.
Okay.
So Virginia creeper and poison ivy often grow together because birds drop the seeds of both of these plants. And so a lot of times they'll sit up in the trees and do their thing and, you know, drop the seeds. And so a lot of times you'll find them growing together.
And now, okay, so talking about plants, and it seems like they're learning more and more about plants all the time, like how almost like trees can sense when another tree is being chopped down and they'll tighten its sap or produce, you know, or there's some forces out there that underground they're one organism, I guess. The root systems are, you know, completely connected. Have you ever seen anything like that? Or
yeah, I've been reading about that. A lot of plants have to have a fungus that grows into it. It's called mycorrhiza, and they may be able to send some type of chemicals through these that way. I'm not sure, but it is really interesting how, or even if I've heard about if caterpillars eat a plant. So they might be able to give off some type of chemical that maybe either goes through the roots or even through the air. So it always makes you feel bad about eating a plant.
I eat meat and I eat vegetables. I eat both. I don't think there's no way to avoid, you know, killing something and eating it.
Right.
So, I mean, people... Vegetarians wouldn't be so high on their horse if we could hear the plant scream.
Yeah, right. Well, you know what my argument with vegetarians and vegans are? We have canine teeth.
Bingo. Chris, I've been saying that forever. And here's another thing. Notice this. You'll see vegetarians eat a veggie burger, right? But you don't see meat eaters go eat broccoli. Well, go eat meat in the shape of broccoli, you know.
No, that's true. That'd be pretty bad.
I just think it's in our DNA. We have to. I think we're meant to eat meat. I think we're meant to eat both. You know. Yeah. So
we're omnivores.
Exactly, we're omnivores.
That's so. One of the terms that I teach. One class that I teach is called Skins and Skulls. And I've got a wonderful collection of stuffed animals that the Environmental Sciences Division gave us. And I've got a bunch of animal skulls. So one of the things I talk about in that class is, one of the things I like to do is make science either weird, gross, or funny. And so... When I'm talking about carnivores, a lot of times I'll ask the kids, any of y'all have pets? And they raise their hand. How many of y'all have a dog? And they'll raise their hand. I said, does your dog ever come up and lick you in the face? Yeah. I said, well, what's that dog trying to tell you? It loves me. I said, no. Your dog is trying to tell you it wants you to barf. Make you barf? I said, yeah, because that's the way wolves feed their puppies and their wolf cubs, because the pups are not once they're weaned, not drinking milk anymore, the parents go out and they kill an animal, they swallow it, they come back to the den. Puppies come running up. They're wagging their little tails. They're all excited. They're barking. They come up and they lick mom and dad in the face and blah, they regurgitate.
I did not know that.
So that's what, when a dog licks you in the face, that's what they're wanting. They're wanting you to regurgitate, because a dog is like a wolf puppy that never matures. because a wolf, once it matures, it's not like a dog. It's not, you know, not playful. So that has been bred out of dogs so that they stay puppy like.
That is so. See, this is what gets me about you, Chris. How do you know all this? You're a walking encyclopedia. You're a Google.
Well, I learned that from Dr. Marcella Cranford, and she actually had wolves. And one time my husband and I got to go, she called us to come over to her house. She had some wolves that she used in her education programs. And she said, I've got two new wolf puppies. They're 2 months old. And she said, I'm trying to get them used to other people, especially men. So Kenny and I went over there. And they were so much fun because they, you know, they gnaw on your arm and they pull on your shoestrings like a puppy would. And I said, well, we've been mauled by wolves and lived to tell about it.
But that's the thing. Okay, photography, plants, now we've got animals. And because I also know this, I know you're a guru with bugs. You know a lot about bugs. I mean, and I'll never forget, and we already talked about this the other day, but I'll never forget seeing Chris Light walking through the hallway at Willowbrook Elementary School, and she had baby black widows. In my mind, this is the memory I have. I remember it looked like they were loose. Maybe that was just my fear and panic, but not too many people would be comfortable, period, carrying black widows. So,
well, the story behind that was, I have a website and I wanted a picture of a black widow for my website. So one of my friends just happened to mention that she had one in her basement. So I said, well, if you see it again, I want you to catch it for me. So a couple of days later, she calls me and she said, Chris, I've got you a black widow. I caught it with my Swiffer. Yeah. So she brought it over to me and Kenny and I kept it in a plastic, some type of plastic, like salad box or container. So it was clear and we could see it. Well, we named her Arachne and she stayed outside. I wasn't going to bring her in the house, but we cut a little slit in the lid of that thing so that Kenny could catch flies. He's real good about catching with his hands.
Oh, is he?
So he would catch flies and throw them in there and we'd watch her run up and then she'd spin a web around them. So we were going to go on vacation and we said, you know, we really need to feed her real well. So we threw about 5 or 6 flies in there. So we came back 2 weeks later and Kenny got down to her before I did when we got out of the car and he goes, you won't believe what Arachne did. And I'm thinking, well, I can only think of one thing that a female black widow would do. And she had laid an egg case. So we decided to go ahead and let them hatch and see what happened. So there was probably close to over 200 babies in that egg case when they hatched. The good thing is that the babies are not venomous. And only half of them were venomous because only the females are venomous. So that was what I took down to school, and they did not get out. I was very careful that they did not get out.
Well, you know, okay, there's another thing. I did not know that baby spiders, now is that all baby spiders or just baby black widows?
It's just the baby black widows. If you were to get bitten by one, they wouldn't have enough venom to hurt you anyway. But they're really, I know a lot of people don't like spiders, but they're really beautiful.
You never see the males.
Well, if you know what you're looking for, you might see one. I've got a picture of a male on my website and I'll talk more about my website later on, but, I do have a picture of one and they look very different than the females do.
So what would they be called? Because the black widow is because does she kill the male?
The to be dead husband.
To be dead.
They're able, after they mate, the female is able to store what he has. I've got to keep this clean for kids. the male is able to store what he donated to her. And so she didn't, Arachne actually laid three egg cases over the time. We had her from April until October. She finally died in October.
So they can store that and have as many kids as they want, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so they only need the fella once.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, get out of here, we're done. Okay.
Well, no, a lot of times the reason they're called black widows is because they will kill and eat the male.
Oh.
But the same way with praying mantises. And it, as awful as it sounds to you guys, they're actually contributing to their future offspring because the female is getting a meal from them. So she's able to have, you know, a lot more nutrition from her mate.
Boy, it's such a dark world those insects live in.
Don't let me tell you about bees.
Bees? Well, I love bees. Sort of. I love the honeybees.
Not a male bee.
A male bee?
They get one shot. And I'll have to leave it at that.
You know, I love honeybees, but all the other things I can't stand. Yellow jackets, wasps, that make no sense to me. I can't stand those things.
Well, I know, but they do have a purpose. Yellow jackets and wasps will eat spiders and they'll eat caterpillars. So if you ever open a mud dauber nest, you'll see all kinds of spiders up in there.
Really?
And one of the things that we always enjoyed watching at science camp was the mud daubers. I like to call them the mud dauber condominiums. So we had hundreds of those out there at that old cabin. But we would watch them. The female goes out and she gets a blob of mud and carries it in her mouth. And I always tell the kids, I said, well, she can't carry a bucket. So she takes that mud back in her mouth and dabs or daubs little upside down U-shaped rows. And it may take 100 trips for her to make one of those tubes. So after she gets that tube made, then what she does is she goes out and she finds spiders and she stings the spider. It doesn't kill it, but it will paralyze it. Then she takes the spider back and stuffs it up into that that cell there. She lays an egg on it and then goes and gets more mud and covers that up. So I always like to ask the kids, you know, why do you think she puts a spider up in there and lays an egg on it? Well, it's baby food. So when the egg hatches, the larva, the wasp larva, eats the spider. And she may do that three or four times, sometimes five or six times. You'll see a tube with later on in the year when the wasp goes through metamorphosis and finally comes out, it can chew a hole through that mud. And then you'll see a little round hole about the size of a pencil eraser. Other holes you might see are big and rectangle shaped. That's where a bird has pecked a hole in the tube and eaten the spiders and the wasp larvae out.
Now, you know, so much is going on right there. First of all, my God, what a horrible way to go. You'd be paralyzed and you'd be wake up around a bunch of kids. You know, meals. That'd be horrible. I've seen those dirt daubers, and now I know why they're called dirt daubers or mud daubers. You know, everybody has seen those things. I had no clue though they were filled up with paralyzed spiders and eggs. That's
what's even more interesting is sometimes you'll see a little metallic green bee that goes up in there, and that's called a cuckoo bee. And what she does is she, you know, like a cuckoo bird lays their eggs in another bird's nest. This cuckoo bee lays her egg on the spider, and it may actually eat the larva and the spider too. So yeah, I mean that's what's so fascinating about it, about nature. You know, if you take your time to watch it and look at things, it's just fascinating.
Now, you know, back on spiders, I will tell you something I noticed a long time ago, and this really blew my mind. I was working at Clinton High School. This was years and probably close to 20 years ago. And I remember I was outside, and above me they had the little light fixtures outside. And I looked up and I noticed a spider had built its web right there in the light fixture. And I just thought, you know, that's a weird place to build the. And then I saw a moth fly right into it. And I thought, wow. I mean, yeah. It just blows your mind to think something that small would be that smart enough to know, yeah, hey, moths like light.
Well, speaking of spiders, I'm going to give you a link to my YouTube channel. And I have four spider videos that I talk about and show pictures of spiders. And, you know, some people don't like spiders, but they're actually fascinating. And some of their strategies are incredible. Back on about insects, you remember at Willowbrook when we had the secret garden?
Yes.
Okay. I planted milkweed in there. And the reason I wanted milkweed in there is because monarch butterflies lay their eggs on it. And that's the only food that monarch caterpillars will eat is milkweed.
Milkweed.
And so one year we had enough caterpillars, and we had 25 classes at the school. We had enough caterpillars that every classroom had a caterpillar. And of course, it kept me busy trying to keep food because I had to take leaves around to the school. But, you know, the kids got to watch these caterpillars grow. And in some of the upper grade levels, they actually measured them and would keep up, because they start out at two millimeters. So they're little tiny. You can hardly see them. But in 2 weeks, they're the size of my pinky. So they're about 30 millimeters. And so I tell the kids, I said, if you grew the way that these monarch caterpillars grew, you would be as big as a school bus, as long as a school bus, and weigh as much as two elephants by the time you were 13 years old.
So, that's impressive. But if, you know, COVID and quarantine keeps happening, I think some of us are on our way. You know, we don't lay off the little bit. Well, here, this is something now, because you get to see this firsthand, and, you know, thank God we have people like you that are teaching children science, because it is more important now than ever for kids to learn about science, because also we're seeing firsthand about how people who don't believe in science or don't trust science, the effects that that can have. But have you seen anything other than the obvious, like, you know, the weather being extremely different every other day, but have you seen anything in nature with the effects of climate change?
Yeah, fire ants.
Oh, yeah.
Fire ants are a real one, because they haven't been around forever. But as it gets warmer and warmer, these fire ants are able to move farther north. And, they're down at Willowbrook. Because back before COVID hit, we took my grandson down there to play on the playground, and they both sting and bite.
Oh, yeah.
So what they do is they clamp onto you with their mandibles, and then they stick their stinger into you. And it's only the females. Only female bees, wasps, and ants can sting. So these females are rough, aren't they?
Yeah, there's something about the women in this. I don't know what it is. So, you know, I've even noticed, like in the Chattanooga area, armadillos.
Yeah. Well, they're here too.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've got armadillos here. They found them in the Smokies even.
That's nuts to me. So now I haven't followed this a lot. I don't know. Maybe you have, because since we are talking about bugs and we are talking about the climate somewhat, wasn't there like a worry that something was happening to honeybees? The population was dropping.
Yeah, they've got that lost hive syndrome. It is one thing, but then they've got trachea mites that are attacking that. They bees or insects don't breathe like we do. They don't breathe through their mouth or not. They don't have a nose. So on their sides of their abdomen, they've got these little holes. They're called spiracles. And those mites can enter those spiracles and get into the trachea that branch out where the oxygen carbon dioxide exchange happens. And so, you know, that would kill them. Fortunately, we don't have the murder hornets here yet. That was
now,
another 2020 thing.
So is that something due to those mites or whatever, just overpopulated? And because surely goodness, they've been around.
Yeah, I don't know if they were brought here from someplace else or not. That's really not part of my expertise. But
gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, I have read about them.
Now the but you have saw just based on what you do right off the with climate change, you're seeing fire ants move up here in this area, a lot of more pests.
Yeah, well, you know, we've got kudzu bugs.
Oh,
those
yeah.
are awful little. They're related to stink bugs. They're a lot smaller, but they're nasty. Of course, the ladybugs. The Asian ladybugs are the ones that infest your house.
The love bugs.
No. Well, love bugs are a different thing. You find those down in Florida.
Okay.
They're the ones that fly United. So, you know, people have to really keep those off their car because they'll ruin their car's finish. But, yeah, one thing I hope we don't get is the pythons.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You can keep
those. Cold enough, those pythons won't make it up here from the Everglades.
I'm also a little worried about, like, if the sea levels do rise, like, a lot of those Florida people are going to come here. That worries me, too. So,
well, the way they're building all these new neighborhoods around here.
Oh, I know. Maybe Florida man needs to be tough like the tardigrade. Just get down if you're going to live down there.
Build maybe they can just move inland. Or
okay, well, let me ask you this. This is going to be a tough question. This is a left field, tough political question.
Uh-oh.
Here on the Abracadam podcast, we get political. So, Chris Light, I'm going to ask you, if you had to vote for one, to be president, would you vote for Bill Nye, the science guy, or Dr. Emmett Brown from Back to the Future? Which one would make a better president?
Ooh. Well, Emmett was a little nuts.
Well, I mean, that can't be too far to what we're used to.
probably Bill Nye, because he's got a lot more sense, and he's not quite as far out.
All right, there we go, Bill
Nye. Well versed in a lot of, and actually, that's important to be well versed in lots of different parts of science, because we've got a lot of people in Washington that are not. So, and that's another thing that's important to get back to teaching science to kids. Because they've got to have a good understanding about why we need to protect nature and the environment and our atmosphere and that type of thing.
Now, because I gotta ask you this. Also, I like to ask a blooper question or a crazy story. What is one of the craziest things that's ever happened while you were teaching kids science?
Oh boy, I've had a lot. Probably one of the most shocking was when I worked at Willowbrook Elementary School in the science room. And one morning I opened the door and there was a black plastic bag on the floor. I opened it up and almost lost my breakfast because it was the heart, lungs, trachea, and esophagus of a pig. Well, we were studying the human body at that time, and one of the teachers decided, oh, it would be nice to bring that in so the kids could see it. She brought it in from the slaughterhouse, but did not bother to tell me. But once I got over the shock, I thought, you know, this is a wonderful opportunity for every kid to get to see. So I talked to the principal, and over 2 days, every kid in the school got to come in, and I gave a talk about it. And so when we talked about the lungs, I talked about the importance of keeping your lungs clean. And I said, this was a non-smoking pig. And the way I know that is because its lungs are nice and pink. And I said, if it had been a smoking pig, its lungs would have been brown or black. But like I said, I always like to make things either weird, gross, or funny. That one was gross. Probably one of the funniest, well, a funny one was we were talking about the planets. And so I had the kids naming off the planets, and they got to planet U, and they went Uranus. And I said, no, your anus is your butthole. And it is not nice to call a planet a butthole. And the teacher's mouth just dropped open. And she, like, I can't believe you said that. And I said, they'll never forget that. And sure enough, a few weeks later, our elementary schools go to fourth grade. And I ran into a kid that was in eighth grade. So I'd had him 4 years earlier. And he said, Ms. Light, we were talking about you in science today. And I thought, oh boy. And he said, we were talking about the planets. And I said, well, you never forgot it, did you? So, you know,
they were talking about the planets and talking about a butthole. So,
yeah, right. So don't call it Uranus, it's Uranus. But I also told the kids, I said, you know, did you know we have two suns in our solar system? And they go, no, we don't. And I said, yeah. I said, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune, S-U-N. So it helped them to remember the last three planets. And I hated it when Pluto got demoted. That happened when I was teaching.
I hated that too. That was horrible.
In 96 is when they demoted it. But another thing that happened one time, and this is something really funny. A kid said, I was teaching about chemistry. So we were talking about the differences between chemical changes and physical changes. So I said, a physical change is something like water turns to ice and then steam, and then it can turn back to water and then ice. You haven't made anything new, it's still water. But with a chemical change, you've changed it, you've made something different. So I said, like lighting a match, you can't unburn a match. So you've got a burnt match, you can't make it go back to wood. If you rust something, you can't make it go back to unrusted steel. Or food. I said, food doesn't look the same going in as it does coming out. And this one third grader pipes up and he goes, corn does. I thought the teacher and I were both going to lose it on that one.
Corn's indestructible.
So at one time I was telling kids about uses for trees, and sometimes I say things before I think about what it's going to come out as. And I said, well, in Holland, they plant trees to break wind. And I mean, I was talking about the poplar trees that they use as windbreaks.
Oh, so, okay. And are you still doing the classes at American Science Museum?
As of March, I haven't.
Okay.
I'm hoping that once we can start getting back into normal schedule, I'll be able to go back into the schools because I really, really enjoy it. And I'm able to do things. I can bring in things that the teachers are not going to have access to.
Yeah.
So, and it kind of gives the teachers a break and the kids get to hear somebody different talk. So I'm hoping that once maybe the 21-22 school year, we'll be able to get back into the schools so that teachers can contact the American Museum of Science and Energy for those classes.
Okay. American Museum of Science and Energy, if they're interested in doing the science classes. And now you had mentioned your YouTube channel. You have a YouTube channel right now. What
Well, I haven't come up with a good name for it yet. Right now, it's just got a, and I'll give you the link. If I can come up with a cool name, I'll name it. But I have about 6 or 7 different videos that I've done. I've got the 4 on spiders. I've got two that are kind of long. One of them was about a day at the beach that I did when I was down at Pensacola Beach. And I found some really cool stuff that day, like mermaid purses. You know what a mermaid purse is?
No, I do not.
A skate egg case. I found a sea cucumber that had washed up on the beach. Those are really cool because they can, if something bothers them, they can squirt their intestines out their rear end. Oh. So even, you know, going to the beach, I can find some pretty cool stuff too. But I've done a couple of hikes here in East Tennessee. One was at Hall Ridge, that's in Oak Ridge, and then one was down at Piney River. And I just talk about things that I find along the trail. And so it's kind of like a nature hike. In the spring, I lead wildflower hikes. So hopefully this April won't be like last April where everything got shut down, but I've led wildflower hikes up at Frozen Head for about 30 years.
Okay. Now let me ask you this. Cause, do you still, I remember you used to do like a star night. Do you still do like a star night where you have the kids and the telescope looking at the stars?
We did that at Willowbrook. I had to bring in people from the group in Oak Ridge called Orion.
Okay.
They were the ones that brought in, but that was so cool because we saw Mars, saw Saturn, and we actually got to watch the International Space Station go over.
That's super cool. So much cool stuff with you, Chris. On the YouTube channel, if someone wanted to get in touch with you now, like right now, if they wanted to get on YouTube right now, would they just search Chris Light?
No, because there's more other Chris Lights. Another thing, I'll send you the link.
Okay.
They can get there. I also have sent you my website. It's easttennesseewildflowers.com.
easttennesseewildflowers.com. Now, and they can, if someone wanted to contact you, they could contact you that way, correct?
Yes, I've got my email address on there. And if they want to see the pictures on that website, you have to find the search all galleries. It'll say search all galleries at the top of the page. If you click on that link, the pictures are in those galleries. And I've got over 100 galleries. a lot of them are about nature. So, you know, if they get on there, they can find a lot of things because I've got snakes and spiders and birds and butterflies, just about anything about nature in this area.
Okay. Awesome. Well, you know what? I've really enjoyed this conversation, Chris, and, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and talking with us.
This has been so much fun, and, I really appreciate you inviting me to join you, and, I look forward to talking to you again.
Absolutely.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that episode of the Abracadam Podcast with Chris Light. I love talking to Chris because every single time I do, I learn something new. And she's just that kind of person. You can tell she really loves science. And I tell you what, if you live anywhere in the Oak Ridge area, Anderson County, Knox County, and you guys should really take your kids to her science camp program at the American Museum of Science and Energy, especially whenever things get back to normal. That's something you should definitely check out. Chris puts on a great program for kids, teaching them stuff about science, and they love it. Also, if you get a chance, check out her website at easttennesseewildflowers.com. You can get in contact with Chris, and also I will be posting a link of her YouTube channel. That way you can go on YouTube and see some of the cool things that Chris does on there. I want to give a plug real quick for you guys that have not done so yet. Be sure to subscribe and follow the Abracadam Podcast on any platform that you listen to your podcast on. Tell your friends about it. Spread the word. Let's get some more subscribers and followers in here. Also, January 30th, I will be doing a virtual show on Zoom for only $10. You don't have to leave your house. You and your family can sit right in your house, in your living room, and watch Danny Whitson's Magic and Comedy Show virtually on your computer screen through Zoom. You can purchase tickets at brownpapertickets.com. They're only $10. Purchase your tickets now, January 30th, 8 p.m. You can see my show. All right. Well, I'm out. And like always, my abracadamets, thank you for listening.
Abracadamets.